Ontario Street, just steps away from City Hall, is your luxury wellness destination offering elevated skincare and relaxation experiences featuring four beautifully designed treatment rooms staffed with professional estheticians dedicated to exceptional care, personalized treatments and results-driven skincare, and specializing in luxury facials, body treatments, massage, and advanced skin therapies using premium products. Follow at Skin Fusion Kingston on Instagram for news and offers, and book online at skinfusion.ca or call 613-541-0111.
The following program is an all-language show which includes open discussions on topics related to the LGBTQ plus community and beyond, including, but not limited to, mature subject matter such as sex and sexuality, personal experiences, and more. We aim to create a respectful and inclusive space for all. Listener discretion is advised. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the producers and this outlet. Stay tuned for thought-provoking conversations and so much more.
Hi, this is Emily Saliers from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Rainbow Country.
Today on Rainbow Country, a queer artist spotlight featuring Canadian transgender artist, Trans Star. Plus my first exit interview from the reboot of Project Runway Canada. That and more next. So stay tuned. The Gay Talk Radio right here on Rainbow Country.
Hello, my name is Conchita.
And I'm Barbecue.
And my name is Hardcora.
And we are the B-Girls.
You're listening to
Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Well, hello, and welcome to a brand new journey through Rainbow Country. As I like to call it, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm producer and host, Mark Tara. By the way, Rainbow Country originates from CIUT-FM in Toronto, and now proudly in syndication across Canada. And that is thanks to you, tuning in, streaming, downloading, but ultimately, listening. Together, we continue to build Rainbow Country into a nationally syndicated gay radio show, as well as being a number one LGBT podcast. So, today, a spotlight on Canadian indie transgender artist, Trans Star, who joins me to talk about her latest four-song EP, Dowager. We'll find out all about her latest musical endeavor, as well as how CBC Radio supported her early on in her career. Plus, in Hour 2, music from LGBT artists, independent artists, which is how we've come to know and love in classic disco, classic 80s, classic house. All of that lies ahead as we start this journey through Rainbow Country. But first up, my first exit interview for the reboot of Project Runway Canada, which originally ran starting back in 2007 and aired for two seasons. 2025 marks its triumphant return.
Gonna be fun.
This is actually happening. It's like the best stock quality front
page of your favorite magazine, and I make it look easy. Let's start the show. Say hello to your judges. Fashion designer Spencer Badu, fashion journalist Jeannie Becker, and your mentor Aurora James.
We need drama. Drama!
I feel like I'm cracking under the pressure. Oh,
should this rip? We're toast.
It's all fucked up. That's it. I'm out.
That was like a bad home ec project.
There was a lot going on.
It really sucked to hear that critique. Your model wasn't able to continue wearing your design, so she won't be coming out.
Tired of this shit.
In this competition, sometimes you're in and sometimes you're out. Please welcome
Patrick Ta,
May Pang,
Jason Wu,
the one and only Christian Siriano.
Oh my God, you are nuts.
Fashion is everything to me.
This was one of my favorite looks.
I'm ready for this. I'm focused.
Well, it's a wow.
I feel like I can do anything.
I love this look.
I want to win this whole thing.
I want it more than anything.
And I love the drama when it walked out.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Naomi, hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Okay, let's just jump right in, Naomi. You are the first designer to be eliminated from this season of Project Runway Canada. Okay, did this elimination, did it come as a surprise to you?
Yes. Thank you for asking me that. Yes. Justice for Naomi.
And why?
Okay, you know what? The project was direction, high fashion runway look. What is high fashion? I don't know the definition. I don't really care. But to me, high fashion isn't like cocktail dresses. And I don't think I like made a cocktail dress necessarily. I think I made a high fashion look. And I think that all my competitors did an amazing job. And I'm super, 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 super proud of them. Love you guys all. But I don't think that my look deserved to go home.
Well, you just said, you just laid out what it was. You have a history working with and designing with denim.
Yeah.
And you just said the first task was creating a high fashion runway ready look based in denim. So what do you think went wrong? Girl, what went wrong?
I know. Okay, here's the thing. Is like, yes, I'm like the denim extraordinaire girl. Like the design concepts in my head were stunning, gorgeous, beautiful, like best design concepts like out there. But I just am so underdeveloped in my technical skills. So I was nervous and intimidated by the room full of people that I undermined myself, and I didn't fully think about what I was capable of, and I got in my own head and didn't think I was capable of making those grandiose designs that I had planned out. And so I wasted time and freaked out and cried a little bit. And then I put something on the runway that, you know what, I'm not proud of. I think that was a very cool, beautiful look, and it deserved more flowers than it got.
They really loved the bolero aspect.
Yeah, period. Bolero was kind of my thing. Like, I'm not wearing one right now, and I didn't wear one on the show, which is kind of weird, but boleros are my thing. Like, I have perfected the making of a bolero, and you know what? Maybe if it was a bolero challenge, I would have won.
Why did you want to be on Project Runway Canada? Why?
I wanted to be on Project Runway Canada because I was born to be a star, and I've also been blessed with the talents of being a fashion designer. So when those two things came together where I was like, oh, I can be a star and show off what I'm capable of, it was a no-brainer.
So at one point during the elimination process, you started laughing. And at one point, you even said, sorry. Why do you think you reacted the way that you did during the elimination process?
I think that we can see through the whole episode that I'm pretty expressive. Like, anytime something happened, it was like, camera cut, Naomi. And I was like, you know, I am not one of those people that have a poker face. Honestly, like, I should never play poker. No one ever invite me to a poker tournament. I just was feeling so many emotions in that moment. I was so overwhelmed. I literally had to pee so badly, and I couldn't pee. Like, what was I going to do? And I just, like, had so much in me. And it's also hard for me not to talk because I have so much to say. I have so many opinions. And I just started laughing because I was like, I can't even believe that I'm in this moment right now, and I have to pee, and I have so much to say. So I just started laughing.
It had to come out somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so established in 2022, Obnoxious. This is your own designer label, I believe, based in Winnipeg, Manitoba. By the way, Rainbow Country, this little gay radio show that you are on is on Winnipeg's very own CKUW-FM. So here's the question. What got you into fashion originally? How did this all start for you?
I was never, like, I've said this to a million people. I was never a child that played with, like, toys and whatever. I just did dress up. And through my life, like, as a kid, I was always the one, like, why is Naomi wearing that to school? Like, she looks like a nun. I'm like, sorry that I'm taking risks. And then I was watching a Next Top Model show at one point in my life, and I said, there's a girl on it. I went, wait, I kind of look like her. So then I applied into the modeling world, and I've been modeling for, I want to say, like, 7 years now. And it got to a point where I was like, you know what? I don't want to be the model anymore. I want to be the designer, because this outfit is not giving. So let me take the reins here.
Earlier, you gave a shout out to your fellow cast members. Did you guys bond during this whole process?
Yes. The best part of this whole experience was not being able to say I was on Project Runway. It was not being in front of those amazing judges. All of these things are incredible in their self, but the most amazing part were the bonds that I formed with people. And it wasn't shown on camera, but we were crying together. Leland finished his outfit early. He hopped over to, like, explain something to me that I didn't know how to do. We're cracking jokes in the workroom. I mean, I was obviously the least experienced, but they were even telling me what some stuff was. Like, I was like, what even is this? Me and Delaine kikied right away. We looked at each other. The first one we saw each other, she goes, wait, you look like me. And I was like, I look like you. And we just became this, like, dynamic duo, which I wish that everyone got to see more of. Like, at one point we were holding hands and we were like, we're too pretty to be sad. We're too pretty to be sad. You know, it's like a little bit of a bit. But and then, like, when I got eliminated, like, I had everyone supporting me around me for the most part. But, like, Delaine, Charles, Leland, they were my people. They supported me. They believed in me. And we were all crying together, and it was just beautiful how much I was welcomed and appreciated into these people who I now look up to immensely. Now that I'm off the show, because I didn't know who anyone was before, I don't know who anyone is ever, I'm like, wow, these people were my friend, and they thought that I was awesome, and I love you guys, and I wish that I could just turn them all into babies and carry them around forever.
What was the most challenging part about this whole experience for you?
The most challenging part by far was the fact that I undermined myself and I was in my head, and that I didn't, once it was time to start, well, no, actually I made my bolero, made that bolero lickety split because that's my thing, but then I had to make the rest of the look because you can't send a model down the runway in a bolero. And I didn't believe in my skills. I was looking at the people around me and I was like, wow, they're making something better than I ever could. Naomi, you suck. Naomi, this. I'm in my head. And I also put a metal zipper through a sewing machine and I broke a needle, which was really dumb. Like, obviously that's going to happen. And so, like, I just was in my head. I was breaking the sewing machines, and it was hard to get out of my head and sew something together and put it down the runway and believe in myself. But I pushed through. Like I said, I came from the trenches. You guys did not see me crying, but I was crying. So just pushing through despite getting in my head and being so overwhelmed by the talent around me.
Naomi, here's my last question for you, and it's simply this. Best part about being part of Project Runway Canada, this is a new reboot.
The best part about being a part of Project Runway Canada was the people. Like I said, the friends that I made there, being around that amazing talent, those awesome designers, and the production team. incredible people. I love them. I love having a mic taped to me. I love a camera in my face. And I love that I was on TV. So the fact that I got to be a star surrounded by amazing people, done. I will be on everyone's TVs again. Do not forget me or I'll remind you and you'll regret it.
From your lips to God's ears. Well said, well done, well designed. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
New episodes of Project Runway Canada drops on Fridays and streams on Crave.
This is going to be fun.
This is actually happening. It flat to the star quality front page of
your favorite magazine, and I make it look easy. Let's start the show. Say hello to your judges. Fashion designer Spencer Badu, fashion journalist Jeannie Becker, and your mentor Aurora James.
We need drama. Drama!
I feel like I'm cracking under the pressure. Oh,
should this rip? War toast.
It's all fucked up. That's it, I'm out.
That was like a bad home ec project.
There was a lot going on.
It really sucked to hear that critique. Your model wasn't able to continue wearing your design, so she won't be coming out.
Tired of this shit.
In this competition, sometimes you're in and sometimes you're out. Please welcome
Patrick Ta,
May Pang,
Jason Wu,
the one and only Christian Siriano.
Oh my God, you are nuts.
Fashion is everything to me.
This was one of my favorite looks.
I'm ready for this. I'm focused.
It's a wow.
I feel like I can do anything.
I love this look.
I want to win this whole thing. I want it more than anything.
I love the drama when it walked out.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Up next, Trans Star.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Here I am again, dissolving at my escritoire. Feels like you're not a fan, and let no one say that you are one of the special people who's unsure what's allowed. Crowd when you're all alone in the room.
I don't care if you're gonna drag my name through the ditch. I don't mind if you find the outfit hard to forgive. I don't care if you're gonna come back when I am rich. I'm gonna live. I bitch.
Transstar. Hi, how are you?
I'm very well indeed, thank you.
I have to say thank you so much for being here, especially for me and for the listening audience to get to know you as a Canadian independent artist. Let's start here. 2019, your debut EP called Famous Door. Talk to me about your debut EP, Famous Door, from 2019, and essentially the sonic landscape that is Transstar.
Gosh, a sonic landscape. Okay, well, I have so much to tell. It was such a long time ago, but I was actually, the whole Transtar project, believe it or not, was kind of someone else's idea. My friend Chris Tate of Park Music in Toronto just sort of said very casually, you know, like over drinks, you know, I could distribute your music if you want to just, we could put out an album. And I thought, okay. And so we chose these six songs, and Chris was kind and generous enough to enlist the services of a famous producer engineer, Michael Philip Voyevoda, who mixed the work that I had produced and turned it into this really like loud, kind of almost raunchy sort of like electronic rock record or something. And you know,
very Carol Pope-esque.
Oh, do you think so?
Yes.
Oh, how interesting. I wasn't, I've never heard that comparison.
Especially vocally.
You don't say, golly. Well, that's needless to say, a flattering comparison. I just kind of sing, you know, I just sing and sing and sing until it sounds good. I mean, I work in this room. I don't know if the picture is part of the interview, but you can see my room is behind me. I just work in this room and I just record, you know, my vocals over and over and over until they don't sound unbearable. That's basically my singing technique.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Chalk Circle, a Canadian alternative rock band formed in 1982, still active, I believe, to this day, probably best known for their hit single, April Fool, a great Canadian rock band, Chalk Circle. Lead singer Chris Tate, who you were just talking about, co-founded Chalk Circle and his independent record company, Park Music. You were just saying over drinks that he would, you know, help to distribute your music. How did you and Chris Tate of Chalk Circle, how did you guys connect originally then?
Oh, golly. Well, I would have to disclose hints about my actual biological age to answer that question. However,
you know, you can just allude.
I am unafraid. No, I'm extremely elderly. I was working with, as you know, everyone in the music business except me is called Chris something. And I was working, this would have been something like 1991 and I was recording a song, and the producer I was working with, Chris Wardman, said, oh, we need background vocals. I'm going to call a friend. And the friend was Chris Tate. And so I met Chris Tate for the first time then. And we've just known each other ever since. And then in 2015, I was starting up my nonprofit electronic music education program, Blackball. And I went to Chris to see if he could help me, you know, find some donated equipment or some donated, you know, synthesizers maybe. And that, all of that, actually Chris Wardman donated a very nice synthesizer at that same time. And so it's just me and all the Chris's. And, you know, this is when we got into this conversation. And to be candid, the informal nature of our working relationship has stayed, you know, very, very, it's really very informal. I mean, we don't even have, you know, anything written down. And that gives us both a great deal of freedom. My next album I'm making by myself here in Guelph, and, that rhymes, I just realized. You know, I'm really just kind of, in the mood to just work on my own. And it's very much the theme of the album coming up. So I haven't told Chris about this, and I will have to seek his blessing. But we have a very, I think when you're friends with someone for like, what, 35 years, you can afford to be, you can be unworried about the housekeeping details. And I think it's made the music better, actually, in a funny way.
So we were just talking about Chris Tate from Chalk Circle. Let's move to, you were just saying everyone's called Chris. Another Chris, one of the co-founding members of Blue Peter, Chris Wordman. Blue Peter, I love Blue Peter. I play their music all the time. Don't Walk Past. And their music videos from the 80s, amazing. Love them.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that connection, your connection to Chris Wordman and how that came about.
Oh, golly, that would be literally...
Going back even further?
That would literally be the 1980s. I had a band, and I think Chris came to see the band. Is there still a Rivoli? I haven't been in Toronto in a really long time.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. You think so? We played at the Rivoli, and, you know, of course, the Rivoli was just the hottest place. Chris just, you know, saw us and heard the music and kind of walked up to me in the... filthy dressing room, and you know, this very shy young man. I thought he was going to ask for my autograph, and instead he said, "I'm Chris Wordman, the producer. Do you want to do some recordings?" And we did a whole bunch of recordings, and one of those was a song, not a very electronic song, actually. This would be 1990, entitled Girl of Your Dreams. And that song got picked up by CFNY, I think. Is there still a CFNY? I mean, this is all ancient. These are things I haven't thought about in a terribly, terribly long time. But yeah, they're very nice people.
But it's the story of your life?
I guess so. And what a life.
Okay, so the singing, the drumming, a track called Marry Me. The singing, the drumming are performed by, from my understanding, inmates of the Grand Valley Institution for Women in Kitchener, Ontario. Talk to me about that.
Right. So that now I have to evoke, believe it or not, another Chris. When I was putting together my electronic music education program, I did a lot of shadowing. I did a lot of sort of following around people who had created special nonprofit music education projects. By themselves, for themselves. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to follow in the footsteps of those people. And I got connected up with a personage by the name of Chris Brown, who started an organization called Pros and Cons and worked in the prisons in the Kingston area where he is located. And I just, you know, I sat in on a session and he was nice enough to let me open up my own shop at the women's prison down the road here, Grand Valley Institution for Women in Kitchener, Ontario. And it was a real whirlwind. Between 2017 maybe and just before the pandemic, I produced two albums of songs written by the women at Grand Valley Institution for Women, and the ones who wanted to participate. I mean, we didn't make anyone, you know, take part. And they wrote, some of them needed a little bit of help with the songwriting. They wrote, I produced, and Chris Brown and I mixed those two albums together. One was released in 2018. And then there was a follow-up in 2020. And there are other albums. There are other Pros and Cons albums that Chris has produced at the prisons in Kingston. Anyhow, I was sitting in at an event, most likely a Pride event at the prison. And the Pride events at the prison are held in the Grand Valley Gymnasium. Now, I'm just going to assume that you've never been inside a gymnasium at a women's prison. There's nothing quite like it. and not great acoustics. And because I was helping one of my participants do one of her songs, I had all my equipment with me, and there were a group of women chanting and drumming as part of an indigenous ceremony, which, you know, is a big part of the life and culture at you know, federal institutions in this country and provincial institutions as well, I assume. Something like 30% of the federal population across the country is indigenous people, which is just an unspeakably horrible statistic. But anyway, I just kind of hit the record button on my rig and then went up to them afterwards and said, you know, I just recorded some of that, you know, would it be acceptable for me to use that in a future project? And they said yes. They all said yes. They were like, sure, that's fine. And so when I was writing Marry Me and producing Marry Me, everything else on that song is me. But there was just this one little bit that I thought needed something extra. So I sort of started digging through. I have a lot of audio. I'm a little bit of a magpie. I'm constantly stealing digital audio from things. And a lot of it's just sounds, you know, bird song and noisy automatic doors. I have a collection of noisy automatic door sounds. And I came across this recording from the chanting and drumming and in the ceremony. And there was this phrase that fit in so precisely with the melody that I'm singing. And it's at the end of that third verse in Marry Me. Like it was, I didn't have to, usually you have to manipulate samples if you want to, like, you know, you want to pitch match them or beat match them. And I didn't have to do any of that. I just dropped this, you know, 800 millisecond piece of audio into the song, and it just fits so well. But you do have to watch for it. It is very short. But yeah, so they get a credit on that album.
Well done. Well done.
Thanks.
Okay. Brave New Waves.
Ah, Brave New Waves.
A Canadian CBC radio show that ran from 1984 to 2007. They aired your cassette demos, I believe back in the 1980s, if I'm not wrong.
In the mid-1980s, yeah.
But having the support of CBC radio, especially early on in your career, what does that mean to you to have had that support?
It means so much. I can't tell you. It was such a great time. And I was very lucky. I mean, I think I was probably better known as a musician during the, you know, years of, I mean, I'm going to say somewhere between 1983 and 1988 or 1989, something like that, when they were playing my stuff. And it was all very much an accident. I really, you know, I didn't know I was a first year university student in Montreal, and I think I met someone at a party, and she was friends with the programming director Kevin Komoda, who is just an amazing, amazing person who I still talk to periodically these days. Interestingly, I'd like to point out that Kevin's first name is not Chris, and which is, you know, remarkable. And he just, you know, heard my stuff, and he said, well, you know, we'll play it on the air. And I was like, come on, you've got to be kidding me. But he wasn't. And so I started working a bit more carefully on my backing tracks, and I did the same kinds of performance in 1983 and 1984 and 1985 that I'm doing today. I mean, I just used a tape recorder. Now I have all this wonderful, you know, equipment, and I can, you know, mix my tracks while I'm performing, and I can, you know, change tempo. I can do all kinds of crazy things. But my performance mode is largely the same as it was in 1983. And yeah, so they would just play my things, and you know, they like rotated them. I mean, it was just extraordinary. And it was all just because I lived in the same city as the programming director. I was, you know, studying at a university in the same city as I, to be honest, I don't remember how we met. But I put that down to extreme old age.
And on that note, we'll return after this Rainbow Country update.
Hi there, I'm Bennett Singer, a documentary filmmaker and the co-director of the new film, Cured. You are listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Hi, I'm Jamie B. of TGCD Style Toronto, and I'm a professional feminization makeup artist and stylist providing male-to-female transformations and mentoring to those who identify as a cross-dresser or a trans woman. I first heard of Rainbow Country and Mark Tara in trying to find a radio station that specifically caters to the LGBT community, and I'm so grateful I found this station. It's crucial having a platform like Rainbow Country that welcomes all aspects of the queer community, including allies like myself and what I do. It casts a spotlight on specific needs and interests of human beings, ensuring that people from all walks of life are being validated. It's a real privilege to be able to work with cross-dressers and trans women by helping them align themselves with their feminine energy through the glorious feminization process. So, I want to thank Rainbow Country and Mark Tara for providing this platform for all of us.
So, as you may know, Rainbow Country is an award-winning gay radio show that's heard on broadcast radio, streaming, as well as a podcast. The broadcast outlets that carry Rainbow Country are listener supported. They rely on donations to help keep the lights on and the airwaves broadcasting. So if you think what I'm doing here on Rainbow Country is worthwhile, I hope you'll consider making a donation to this very outlet you are tuned to. If you happen to be listening to the podcast version of Rainbow Country, I hope you'll consider making a donation to an outlet that does carry this little gay show. How can you do that? Well, simple. Simply head over to marktara.ca, where everything is connected, and hit the donations banner. That's where you'll find all the outlets that broadcast Rainbow Country, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. Have your voice, have your support, especially for independent queer radio, heard.
I'm Brian Bradley, author of Outrageous Misfits, female impersonator Craig Russell and his wife, Lori Russellidi. You are listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
All start for you? How did you end up becoming a musician, becoming an artist? What are the origins of all of that?
I got very fixated on electronic music technology when it had maybe been around maybe a decade in a commercial way in the late 1970s, I guess. And the first commercial synthesizers, I'm a bit of a sort of electronic music nerd. I mean, I've studied it. Nonprofit music education is the subject of my current PhD. You know, I'm studying here at the University of Guelph. I'm in the second year of a PhD, and my area of research is the delivery of music education, and electronic music plays a big part in that, because electronic music is, you know, it really has not gone away. I mean, there were people in the 1980s you know, who really were very dismissive of synthesizers and drum machines and electronic music. And, you know, it was like a thing that was going to go out of fashion. And, you know, I mean, that just hasn't turned out to be the case. I mean, all you have to do is look at, you know, EDM and its enormous influence and its very great popularity. And, you know, electronic music is so important culturally. And it's a force that binds, a force that unites even. I realize I'm not answering your question. I think it might have been someone I knew. I think that Kraftwerk played in a high school auditorium in Ottawa, Ontario in the 1970s. And someone I knew, I can't remember who it was, someone I knew went to see them. I was too young. And it was like a brother or a sister or something. And what they described was so just mind-blowing to me that I went with my little allowance and bought a Kraftwerk album, the first album I ever bought. It's actually on the wall beside me right now, the same album. And I think that was a touch point. I became a kind of follower of Vangelis Papathanasiou. His picture is on my wall too, who is I think probably best known as the composer of the Blade Runner soundtrack, but is responsible for a vast body of work.
Vangelis?
Vangelis, don't you know? The Greeks say Vangelis. And I am told by a Greek friend. And the thing about Vangelis is that his electronic music is so organic. It's like lace or it's so not mechanical. All the knocks, you know, that are delivered to electronic music and its practitioners, you know, that it sounds repetitive and, you know, it's just a machine. And Vangelis really, really turns that argument, you know, on its head. And his music is so kind of, it's sensitive, it's sensual, it's emotional, and it's so simple. You know, his music is so, so simple. And
just think of the theme song from Chariots of Fire.
So it's right, which is, you know, obviously an incredibly famous. That banging kind of white noise percussion effect that opens up that track. I steal that all the time. I have put that effect or something like it on so many of my songs. Yeah, I was very sad when he died. And so he's sort of been my teacher but yeah, electronic music is just, I'm a real believer, you know. I think it has a lot of power, and because of the technological developments that have emerged in the last couple of decades, it's also much more accessible than it used to be. That's why I started Blackball. That's why I started my electronic music project, you know, because it's young people who have not got access to electronic music technology. You know, I mean, you can't do it without a computer and very expensive software. And, you know, it's probably not bad to have someone, you know, walking you through that. And, you know, I'm still running that program, and I'm teaching synthesizer at the university even, which is really nice. I have three students, and we're working with an old modular synthesizer that was donated to the university. And yeah, so electronic music will always be a big, big part of life and the world for me. I think it's fair to say.
So there has to be a story behind this particular name, Transtar. Mm-hmm. Is there one? And if mm-hmm. there is,
uh-huh.
can you share?
Yeah. There's I'm a little bit of a car buff. I'm a little bit crazy for funny old cars. And there when I see a, you know, I don't know, an Avanti or a you know, Maserati Bora, I will whip out my phone and take a picture of it and send the picture to my son, because my son is also kind of crazy about old cars. And I was, and this was right after that conversation that I had with Chris Tate about, you know, putting out an album. And, you know, I started getting offered, as soon as that became known around, you know, the musical community in Guelph is not large. And I started getting offered shows and, you know, I needed a name. And I saw this big orange Studebaker, Transtar with one S. It's a pickup truck from, I would say, the early 1960s. And there's a motorist who I still see it sometimes, drives around in this pickup truck, and it says, you know, and it's got a silver badge on the side that says Transtar. And so I took some pictures and sent them to my son, and you know, I was like, okay, well, I was, like I say, I was being offered dates, and I had to put out an album, and I thought, well, I'll just take the name off the side of that truck. And I just added an S. So it would be Transtar. And thus a non-legendary electronic music artist was born. Yeah, and it's really as simple as that.
So you and I are both part of the LGBT community. For myself, I am gay, and for yourself, you are transgender. So talk to me about that aspect of yourself, and when did you start recognizing that part of yourself and that part of your identity?
Oh, you know, I'm a really slow learner, and I get asked this, you know, quite a lot. And the question is usually worded as, the question is usually put to me in the form of a closet, you know, specifically referred to or alluded to, you know, when did you come out is the question. And, you know, I've always said, well, I wasn't ever really closeted. I was really just clueless. I mean, I was in my 40s or something, and it just never even occurred to me that I might, you know, be a chick. And there's not a lot going on upstairs. I just really just think about synthesizers and makeup and
But looking back over your childhood and adolescence and those periods of time for yourself, do you think that looking back now from where you are now and seeing certain things, do you think that there were little signposts along the way that, you know, you just didn't pick up on at the time?
That's exactly right. I there were just a billion things. I still remember things. I still come up with funny, you know, little remembrances, and sometimes, you know, sometimes quite big things. And that, you know, I have a tendency to nanny my friends. You know, I'm like, you know, put your sweater on, it's cold outside, and don't, you know, don't swear and wipe your nose. You know, my friends are all like, you know, just, it's all right, mom. I've always sewn. there's just a million crazy little things. And I just didn't really pick up on it. And then, you know, like most people who are in their 40s, I did a lot of reexamining, and I, like, you know, I mean, this is late 40s, I guess. I sold my home and I moved to Europe, and I, like, there wasn't, for a long time, I didn't really have a fixed address. I decided to start Blackball. I ended up working in a women's prison. I mean, my life became, and to some extent still is, a very not nomadic life, but I just don't, like, I don't have a partner. My kids are grown up. I don't have a dog. I don't have a mortgage. You know,
you have electronic music.
I have electronic music, but electronic music is mobile, you know, mm-hmm. and thus so am I. And so I lead a very, you know, I mean, I can really make things up as I go along. And, you know, now, I mean, I'm female, you know, physically, thanks to our amazing healthcare system and the wonders of medical science. And, you know, I don't really even remember not being a girl, honestly. I mean, it just seems like another universe to me. Not a bad one, but, you know,
that was then and this is now.
I guess so, yeah.
So I just have a handful of minutes left with you, Trans Star. And
wait, so.
You have new music coming up on in 2025. You have music coming up.
Yeah.
Talk to me about what you have in store.
Well,
that's another EP?
Another EP. It's four songs this time, and they have been selected I'm sort of on the rebound from the second album, I Bitch. I Bitch was written just, the songs on I Bitch were written just when what we're seeing now was beginning. You know, this kind of focused kind of, I mean, I can't really think of another way to say it, bigotry against trans people that's coming from obviously coming from south of the border. And you know, it's I'm reading this book about decadence and revolutions by, I think the author's name is Barzun. I can't remember his first name. And his definition of a revolution is the violent transfer of power and property. And the one thing that we can say about the current anti-trans rhetoric is that it is non-revolutionary, because trans people don't have that much power and we don't have that much property, at least I don't. And so there's we're really not a threat in the way that, you know, like Protestants or whatever were, you know, in the 15th century. And it's kind of a fake thing. You know what I mean? It's kind of a put up job a little bit, you know, trans people are bad. You know, I mean, when in 2020, when that first began to show its very unattractive face, I started writing a lot of really kind of angry, kind of political songs about that. And most, I think all the songs on I Bitch are that, you know, including and especially the title track. I mean, obviously that's a song, that's a fight song, you know. And I still do that song live, and I still get a real, you know, it can be a bit overwhelming. I mean, there's a real kind of fists being pumped in the air, kind of, you know, a refusal to back down. And that was great. I got it out of my system. I just want to have some fun now, and I want my audiences to have fun. And so this album coming up is called Dowager. And Dowager, it's just one dance song after another. Like it's just dance floor, you know, future classics in my fertile imagination. But it is literally dance music. And when I say dance music, I do not mean, you know, Nine Inch Nails or I mean happy dance music. I mean, like, you know, the Salsoul Orchestra. I mean, Chic. I mean, you know, Jive Talkin. I mean, just loose, happy, danceable music that is not too serious. That's what this EP is going to be about. And I'm just kind of wrapping it up now. And there's going to be a release event here in Guelph on the 6th of December at the incredible sound music place, Silence. It's called Silence with a capital S. And they have the most incredible, incredible sound system. I've actually recorded some of the vocals for Dowager at Silence just because the room sounds so great. And, yeah, I think it's time. in my universe to move on from the anger and the protests, which don't really do much anyway. And I know, because I played at a protest in 2023, and let me tell you, that was a day. And I think that we could all use a break, you know, everyone, you know, even the people that hate trans people, like they need a break too. You know, they need some time off, and they need to cut loose and get out on the dance floor. And that's kind of what my optimistic outlook is. It's the songs are really upbeat, you know, and when I say upbeat, I don't just mean they're danceable. I mean, they're happy. They're silly, even.
But they're very smart lyrically. People really, they can dance and move and shake their groove thing, but they can also go a bit deeper, especially with your I Bitch track, like great lyrics on that.
Oh, thank you. Oh,
you're welcome. You're welcome. I have to say, Transstar, thank you so much for your time. Well said. Well said. Well done.
Thank you.
Well recorded. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
That was my spotlight on Canadian indie transgender artist, Transstar. Her four-song EP, Dowager, drops in December. For more information, simply visit transstar.bandcamp.com. And stay locked in, because in hour two, I'll be featuring a three-song Transstar set.
Phone rings. I got a message from the mayor. He's going to call me back the next day. I get the call and he said, if you'd accept, we'd like to honor you with the key to the city. There was an event later that year in May. Just a key, right? Like, key to what? A decent job, a good singing career. It's really a metaphor, but it's history. So a reporter wants to talk to me and says, you know, so it's key, right? Like, what's the big deal? I said, well, not everybody gets the key. So I looked it up, and I guess it is kind of a big deal.
The date, May 17th, 2018, when trans activist Susan Gapka made history by becoming the first trans woman to be presented with the key to the city of Toronto. By the way, past recipients include Rush and the Raptors.
Hi, I'm Joey Lamar, best-selling author of Mambo Lips and Salsa Hips, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Taking us to hour two of Rainbow Country, I Bitch, Transstar.
Here I am again, dissolving at my escritoire. Feels like you're not a fan, and let no one say that you are one of the special people who's unsure what's allowed. Crowd when you're all alone in the room.
I don't care if you're gonna drag my name through the ditch. I don't mind if you find the outfit hard to forgive. I don't care if you're gonna come back when I am rich. I'm gonna live. I bitch. We'll be right back.
this is Ellie Sturton, this year's Arts News Coordinator and co-producer of CFRC Live Sessions and Release Radar Reels on Instagram. CFRC is thrilled to amplify local artists and musicians on our airwaves and social media, and to provide opportunities for them to get the word out about upcoming local concerts and events. Local really does live here at CFRC. Help us keep the magic going by making a donation to the station today.